bit more knowledge of human nature than we do of our own children, right?
Correct.
So he said just because you know what your child does is going to do doesn't mean that you're determining for her, that you're insisting that she go the way that you say she should go. It's just you know her well enough to say that she's going to do that. And that's just, it's not saying, well, this is exactly what's happening with God and us. It's just, he's saying, it's even on such a small level, you can see where just because you know what you're going to do doesn't mean that you're the one who's deciding what you're going to do, then you can sort of see that it doesn't necessarily mean that you don't have the free will.
Let's go right back.
What merit so is it to free will? What merit is your choosing free will to be a tzaddika? If it's already known, what is going to happen? What merit do you earn if it's known?
You're sort of bringing out why God doesn't want the
future. You know that your child can make any decision to do whatever they please. So you can sort of predict, knowing your child, you know very well which way she usually goes, and you can pretty much predict which way she'll go in the future. It doesn't mean that she's not free to do whatever she wants.
But you know what her choice will be.
But does that mean that she will make the choice freely?
Will she ever make, this is my point, will she ever make the choice different from what Hashem knows it will be? Never.
Because his knowledge is on a higher level than our knowledge.
Let's go back to day one. Day one after the first Shabbos. The Shem Yisroch created Odom and Chava, two people.
Right.
He told them, or he told Odom, and Odom told his wife, don't eat from this tree.
Right.
What happened?
The first lesson on freedom of choice.
What happened?
He
did what she wanted, period.
He gave free will.
This was just the beginning of people who make choices which are against the...
In that case, then...
The world has a system. The world has a perfect order. We have been put into the world to, quote, manage the world, to live from the produce and from the fruit of the world, according to our best ability, and do whatever we think is right. We're not doing such a good job, but this is what it is. We have the decision, we have the right to make our own decisions, good, bad, or indifferent. And by that we have to stand, and by that we have to live. That Hashem is Baruch knows what's going to be is immaterial.
What you say, there's a consistency in it. Then it's where the first marriage is very easy.
Not necessarily.
Do
you know Hashem knows what the nature of the person will be, what choices they will make, the nature of the person will be. So it's very easy to match.
But for the first marriage, you got two single, pure people who really haven't gone through the process. In the second marriage.
But Hashem knows how they will go through the process, right?
But he knows. There's no question about it. But we have the right to do in this world as we please. If we do right, then hopefully it will turn out to be right. And if we do wrong, we are accounted for. And you know the phrase of the way Rosh HaMashiach Tzadik, the good man or... he has a bad life and the Roger has a good life. These are the philosophical contrasts in this world. This is the thing you can do about it.
So I'm really getting up to it, but I'm sorry, I guess I better stop because Hashem knows from the beginning what it will be on Yom Din, correct? This is what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting. Right.
It's a problem that,
because it depends on us.
But he knows what you will do.
Who's the question of Hashem?
Sure.
Who are we the question?
The fact of the matter is, that we take a look at the Torah. First of all, what was the pasuk? That Hakol Bidei Shemayim Chutz Mi'or Shemayim. It's based upon a pasuk that we find where it says, Yato Yisrael, right? Mo Hashem Lekech Shoel Mi'amach. What does God ask of you? Ki'im Li'ira. to fear him, to reverence him, right? The Ahavos HaRashem Lekecha, to love the Lord your God, and so on and so forth. Okay? This is what it says. So from this they derive the fact, you know, that Akol Bidei Shemaim, Chusmi Yehu Shemaim, if the Rebbeinu Shel Olam asks us, please, we should have Yira. This is what he wants of us. Wow. So obviously we have the choice either to have Yira or not to have Yira. Then we compare, same, and this is by the way in Sefer Devarim, then we take a look at Sefer Devarim, again, what do we find? We find over there, you know, right? Habrocha im tishmiu, right? If you listen, and then the haklala im loisishmiu, right? And then later on, and we find again the same idea repeated, even more strongly, he says, Riei, Nosati lifnechem hayom es achayim v'yes hatov v'yes hamovitz v'yes hara, right? So, in other words, we are given the choice either to find life by doing that which is right, or to find death in the sense, of course, spiritual death. I mean, it doesn't mean necessarily physical death, but spiritual death by doing evil and so on. So this area belongs to human beings. Rebbeinu Shel Olam gave us, as human beings, this particular area. So if you're going to say, I mean, I think what maybe another idea that you're driving at is, how's Rebbeinu Shel Olam, how can it be sure that the marriage will turn out the way it's supposed to? That first marriage, where we said, Bas Plenia the Pony, you understand?
Yeah.
So this is the gamble that we have in life. It's a gamble. It may or may not turn out well. We don't know. But the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is giving us the chance to start off in the hope that the life that we make with each other will be a good life, particularly if it is a life which is permeated with the desire, you know, to have Yira Shamayim, to have Ahava, Ahavas Hashem, and Ahavas Abrias, that this should be the motivating influences number one.
But he said this is driven that Ploni is going to be a tzaddik or a Russia. It doesn't say that.
What?
It doesn't say that Ploni is going to be a Russia or a tzaddik. It doesn't.
Okay. As far as that's concerned, I mean, you're right.
It doesn't say. So.
Right. This is what Russia is saying. Right. That he leads to the human being himself.
Right.
Right. To be
that's
either a Russia or a tzaddik. Exactly. Yeah. Correct.
One of the most likely places in the middle.
Right. Yes, that's what we learned also at the end of Marcus.
It's not difficult.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to be difficult.
Right.
All right.
I think that this is a deep point between religions.
Yeah.
Of the approach that Judaism takes, and let's say Catholicism takes, with regard to God's position in a person's life.
Yeah, well, there's no question.
It's a very profound point in religion, where you believe here. And God started right off the bat with the Adam and Eve and showed the way that there was a choice, but he knew what would happen.
Yeah.
If Eve ate the apple,
I understand what you're saying.
When you make a choice, you still have the freedom of choice.
But we have the freedom to change our ways.
Yes.
Some position.
We are put here,
we have no idea how to change
it. I mean, this was the general idea of Calvin the Presbyterian Church and so those churches that followed
Calvin.
And
Islam, faithfulness, that's period.
What alternative do we have? Do you want a God that everything is set out? Clear cut?
I mean, as human beings, I mean, I think that we should appreciate the idea that we do have a freedom of choice.
The answer, this is the whole thing in life. Because God knows
that
He knows.
The gods, which is something which you think she's got.
Well, I mean, what's the alternative to the thinking? If God knows, but then He gives the freedom of choice.
I mean, let's take an extreme case.
Choice?
Man,
he
person.
Knows, but he doesn't give you the freedom.
Choice.
Correct.
Yeah, true. I mean, let's take an extreme case. Let's say a person murders another person. So we're going to say, God made me do it. I mean, is that a defense or something like that? I mean, obviously, you can't say it. You see. Yeah. All right.
I tell you, there's this little story, I mean, it's almost laughing, but somebody believes the Hashem is brought. Why do we have to have free choice? Make everything. Not free choice. Why the Yetzer Hara?
Yeah.
Let the Yetzer Hara be abolished completely.
Yeah, it's a Gemara in Sukkot.
The next day, the didn't do this.
Right. Correct, right.
Sure. Oh, you mean the Yetzer Hara causes that?
Yes. I mean, the Gemara and Sukkot has. I mean, that's right. Right. That people wanted, you know, they prayed to the Bnei Shalom, destroy the Yetzer Hara so that we'll only do good, right? So, as a result, the Bnei Shalom, okay, I'll destroy the Yetzer Hara. So, he destroyed the Yetzer Hara, and the following day, they took a look, and not a single egg was born in the land of Israel. So, they begged to get that the Yetzer Hara back, because in the final analysis, in order, I mean, for life to be created, you have to have this challenge of the Yetzer Hara too. You have to have the Yetzer Tov, and you have to have the Yetzer Hara. So,
that comes to the spirit.
What?
That comes
to
the
spirit. Well, when it comes to spirits, the Gemara doesn't talk about these spirits. That's already in the realm of Kabbalah, which is fine. I mean, that's a world of its own, no question at all about it. But, as far as that's concerned, this Gemara that we just quoted, you know, that Arthur quoted, and I supplemented slightly, is it proves the fact that, you know, it's written by Yitzhar and Hashem Elokim Yitzhar Odom, right? God formed man, he created man. If you take a look in the Torah over there, how is the word by Yitzhar written? The answer is written with two yuds. Why is it written with two yuds? So is Rashi comments on it. Says because the Rebbeinu Shalom gave us both a Yetzer HaTov and a Yetzer Hara, but our job is to turn the Yetzer Hara into a Yetzer Tov. In other words, to use, you know, these things, I mean, these forces, and see if we can, what shall I say, subdue them, whatever, but at least to turn them, you know, to the benefit of mankind. Benefit of our own life and the benefit of mankind. Pardon me? Don't rob in the Arab. Yes, right. Yeah, right. But what I quoted by Yisrael Hashem and Akim, I mean, this isn't veracious yet. Yeah.
If without some Yetzer Hara, there wouldn't be any accomplishment in the world.
Right.
There would be no developments, no technical advancements.
Yeah.
People
yeah.
would live, be happy with what they got. That's it,
see?
During
the time of the Shia,
yes, but we have to reach those days. We haven't gotten there yet. Okay?
Then we shouldn't call it an evil inclination.
It's the inclination to do evil, if you wish, okay? The point is that it is temptation, really. That's what the Yetzer Hara is,
nice.
Okay? Needless to say, everybody looks upon these terms through their own looking glass, okay? So that, you know, to one, the Yetzer Hara represents the Malach HaMavis, according to one interpretation, okay? So, it all depends, you know. One says that the Satan is the Yetzer Hara, you know, the devil made me do it, and so on, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the final analysis, we have to understand that, you know, what it represents is really that life for each and every one of us is a challenge. And we have to try to meet the challenge in the best way we possibly can. Kizeh kol ha'odam, this is what life is all about. All right, let's continue now with the Gemara.
Okay.
All right. The Mishnah, if you remember, began with a machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua, right? That Rabbi Eliezer says that mekanei lo al pishnayim, that you need two witnesses for the man to warn his wife, don't monkey around with so and so, don't you dare be secluded with him, right? And also, Rabbi Eliezer says, a mashkal pi ed echad, that if he has one witness to say that she went into seclusion with the man even after he had warned her, publicly not to in the presence of witnesses, so he can then proceed with the business, you know, of bringing God to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Kohen, and going through with the whole process of the Mayim HaMa'orim. All right. Rabbi Yeshua, on the other hand, says, Bekani lo al pishnayim, right? He also agrees that's Bekani lo al pishnayim, Mashka pishnayim. But he says you need two witnesses to say that they saw go into seclusion with the man and, you know, to carry on over there. That is for a time long enough for her to have carried on with the man. Okay? So it says, the Gemara now says, therefore, Ad kan lo plige elabikidui sasira. It says, if we take a look at the machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, we see that as far as warning and saying do not be in seclusion with the man, right? So they're both in agreement that you need how many witnesses?
Two.
You need two witnesses. All right. Of all the two more, but when it comes to the fact that she presumably committed adultery, right? Then eight echod meheman, one witness is believed, right? Naturally, who says one witness? That would be the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, right? Utnan name, and we learned in another Mishnah where it says eight echod omer. If one witness says ani ra'isi shenit meis, right? That I saw that she was literally defiled. In other words, you know, that she had been in her rendezvous in seclusion with the man for a period long enough to for us to assume, you know, that you know, she had become defiled. Then lo hayaso shoso midoraisa, right? Lo hayaso shoso. I have to put the period over there. Then she would not drink the Mayim HaMa'orim. So in other words, the second Mishnah that they quote now would imply what? That you need how many witnesses?
Two.
Two. Because if it's only eight echad, it's not, right? So this obviously then would be more in consonance with the opinion of Rabbi Yehoshua. Right. So far so good, right. So now they say, let's get to the whole argument. All right, let's accept Rabbi Eliezer's opinion about one witness. Obviously, there's a difference of opinion. But let's argue his point now, that eight echad, right? So he says, midoraisa, from the Torah itself, minalon, how do we know that the mehemon eight echad, that one witness will be believed? Normally, it doesn't work this way. So how do I know that in this case it's going to be believed? After all, we've had already a contrary opinion expressed. But how do we know, say, arguing on Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, how do we know that one witness will be believed in this case? So he explains, the Tana Rabbanan says, V'eid ein bo, the pasuk over there in, you know, the perek which deals with Sota says, the eid ein bo, there is no witness against her. Literally, that's what it says, right? So, but this is how they interpret it now. It says, "Bishnayim hakosu medaber, o eino ela apilu biyechad." Do we mean that by aid it means that there aren't two witnesses there? In other words, that the word aid implies two. Are we to say that, o eino ela apilu biyechad, or are we to understand that even if there is only one witness, you understand? So, in other words, the assumption would be that we can accept, in this particular case, the testimony of one witness as being valid. So, Talmud Lomar, so this is why the Pasuk says what? Lo yokum eid echad be'ish, right? Normal rule is that you cannot have only one witness testifying against a person, no matter what kind of a case it might be. So he says, b'mashmash ne'emar, the inference from what is written, lo yokum eid be'ish, that, you know, a one witness cannot rise up and testify against the man, Einu yodea shehu echad. Don't I know that it means one? The word one, if you notice, he says yakum ein. Let's put it this way. Actually, the pasuk does say. But the argument goes as follows. It says, if it simply said lo yakum eid be'ish, right? If the wording was simply a witness cannot arise, you know, to testify against the person. Eini yodea, don't I know shehu echad, that we mean one witness. In other words, the word eid itself being a singular word, right? So we don't need the word echad, we would say. You understand? In order to imply one witness. So ma talmud loma echad, so why then does the pasuk say lo yakum eid echad beyish, right? So he says, bona av. This is in order to establish a general rule. This bona av is the verb for what, you know, if we say Rabbi Yishmael, right? We say binyanov because of echad and binyanov b'shleik suvim, right? What is a binyanov? Binyanov means that this is a basic idea that you can apply to all these various cases in the Torah, either based because of echad on one pasuk or b'shleik suvim. You build it up on the basis of two psukim. That this is a bona av and establishes a general principle. Okay, so. This establishes the following basic principle. Kol mokom shenemar aid, right? Wherever the word aid is to be found in the Torah, harei kan shnayim, right? Then it means that you have to have two witnesses. Ad sheyifrot lecha hakosuf echad. Unless the Torah itself throws in the word echad. In which case, why would the Torah be using the word echad? Then it would be using the word echad in order to imply that maybe there is a case where one witness would be acceptable. Right.
Can you think of any
case
where one witness would be acceptable?
Yes. 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 Besides the fact, you know, that according to, you know, Rabbi Eliezer, who would accept it, you know, as far as that. But we have a basic principle in the Gemara and also in the Shulchan Aruch, all right, which says, "Eid echad ne'amon be'isura," which means that the testimony of one witness is acceptable when it comes to a question of what is osur or mutar. In other words, what is prohibited or what is permitted. In other words, this is an area which is not like, for example, business dealings where you have to have two witnesses, or capital cases, or whatever it may be, you know, those cases that are generally mentioned in the Gemara and Sanhedrin, which deal with criminal cases, cases or civil cases, and so on. So, where do we have eight echad ne'amon b'isura? This would apply to various areas. For example, Osiru Mutar would apply to such things as kashrus. That one witness would be sufficient in order to establish whether something is kosher or something is straight. Another case. A woman's husband has died. Do we need two witnesses to determine the fact that he has died? No, one witness is enough in order to establish the fact that he has died, and so that therefore, you know, she would be free to remarry. Okay, so this is another case where eight echad nem. Yeah.
Why is that nem on Yisur? That would be the opposite.
No, because marriage is also either she is osir to the world for remarriage, or she is mutar to the world. This is what I mean. Okay. This is why it falls into that category of Isura. You understand?
But is it Ne'aman be'Isur, or is it Ne'aman be'Isur or Hesed?
Well, the principle says be'Isura. But obviously, the opposite of Isur is going to be Heter. In other words, if you can testify to the fact that this is Osir, You could also testify to the fact, you know, that it could also be mutter, you understand?
Yeah. Whereas, no matter how many examples you bring that it is true, you have to have some solid proof that it's true. I mean, you know, if you have a principle, you know, a theory or something, and you say, well, you see it works in this case, you see it works in this case, no matter how many cases you say, that's not true.
Okay.
Whereas, if you say, you see, it doesn't work in this case, well, then fine, out it goes.
Right.
And there's the same thing that you say, Eid Echad Ne'eman Bi'Isuro, if one person comes and says, well, you know, I saw such and such, which made this trait, so don't
eat
it,
right.
Then you won't eat it.
Right.
Whereas if a person comes along and says, well, I guarantee you this is kosher.
Right.
Do you believe it?
Well, you should do a little bit private investigation.
That's why I say,
but nevertheless, it would be a basic principle. If one Rav says that it's kosher, you don't need two Rabbanim in order to say it's kosher. You understand?
To cause undue hardship to people.
Yeah, this is true, of course, no question.
Right.
I mean, you don't want to.
Right,
you don't want to create a situation where a woman becomes an aguna for life because, you know, there isn't enough of a.
I was asking actually, in connection with Pesha, is there any time when there's one witness will establish a crime?
As far as crime is concerned,
no,
this is something that we learned in Marcus and Sanhedrin and so on. Right, you need two witnesses. That's no question. It's written. Okay. There's no question.
In a case like this, it's maybe extremely hard to bring two Adim together.
But as I said, I mean, this is a general accepted principle of Eid Echad Ne'eman Bi'Isuro. Okay, so in this particular case, it would be sufficient. Okay. All right. So Eid Harei Kan Shnayim Achifot Lecha Kosev. Right. Echad. Right. The Yomer Achmona Trei Lesbo Elachad. And the Torah says, we're not talking about two, right? But one. In other words, Eid Ein Bo, right? So it means that they don't have any witness. Of course, let's take a look at the Rashi right now, because Rashi expands it in a somewhat different direction. Okay. So we start from the top of the page over there. It says, B'mash Moshe Ne'emar Eid, right? Inasmuch as it says simply Eid. Velo ne'emar edim, witnesses, right? Eini yodea de echot koma, don't I understand then that it means one witness? Elo mide itzrech nirichtav echot, but for the fact, you know, that the Torah has to write the word echot, so shma mino, from this we derive the fact de aid, that whenever we come across the word aid, right? Shnayim mashma. It means
two.
You have to have two witnesses. The eino ela loshen eidos, because eid really means witnessing, okay? Ustam eidos, and normally witnessing means what? Shnayim. You have to have two in order to establish witnessing. The Yomer Achmona. And the Torah says, Trei Lesbo. It says, the El Kai, Leferushe, Maskona, de Milsei, and says above, it says, in order to sum up what has been going on, say, Echim Midrash, the Eid and Bo, how do we interpret the fact the Eid and Bo? So, Elotamo, let's see, would he come over there yet? No. All right. Elochad, so Vehi Lonisposo, right? So the Gemara says, and she was not caught, right? Let's read it as follows. Elohad, one, the Hila Nisposo, if she was not violated, than Asura. Well, this is a very difficult idea, because I'll tell you why. There is a pshat, right? And there is a drash. Okay. The pshat says, Vehilonis Pasa, which means literally, and she wasn't caught. Well, if I would go according to pshat, the pshat means, I mean, goes very simple, right? Husband is jealous of her.
But she wasn't caught.
Right? And the Aden Bar, and there's no witness, you know, about the fact, you know, that she really did commit adultery with somebody. Right? So then the Yovalovrach, Kino, Vikines, Ishto, etc., you know, becomes suspicious and jealous, and so on, and then it goes through the thing. But the way they interpret Vinisposa, here it has reference to a different case. What is the other case that they're talking about? Talking about the case, if you remember, about rape.
Oh yeah, the one in the field.
Yeah, the Gemara. The Torah speaks, you know, that let's say there's a young maiden, right? Yeah, and then it says usposa. In other words, the man literally grabbed her. Bishach avimah. Right? And he had relations with her. So in other words, what does this refer to? It refers to rape. And, right? In other words, she herself did not consent. She was violated against her will.
You know,
right?
Somebody cried out, nobody heard her.
Right, right. So of course, you know, in that case, I mean, the woman, of course, is freed from any suspicion. Because she couldn't help it. So,
yeah. If she's in the middle of the city, she could have yelled.
Correct. She's supposed to cry out in that case and so on. Yeah. Right. Okay. And if she didn't, then this is correct. But again, the question is, how is it being interpreted over here? Okay. So he says the healer is possible. He says asura. In other words, on the basis of one witness who says that she was not violated, in other words, that that it was involuntary on her part, she had no desire, you know, she was not involved, there was, you know, the man forced her, right? Then in that case, then she would be free from the whole business. But if we say that Lloyd is possible, that she did not object to it. You understand? If she had no objections of being secluded with the man, as I say, it's a little bit convoluted. I'll agree with it 100%. But in that case, what is the automatic reaction? Then the automatic reaction is that asura, that the woman at this particular point becomes prohibited to her husband. Okay?
How many witnesses are necessary?
So, in other words, one witness would be enough in order to cause this to happen, okay? But if one witness saw, you know, then in that case, if a man says, well, it's not as simple as all that, I have to tell you right now. Because, first of all, what did Rabbi Yehoshua say?
That
you need two witnesses, right, exactly. So, Rabbi Yehoshua says that you need two witnesses,
right.
So what is the effect of having one witness? One witness would not do the job, according to Rabbi Yehoshua.
Rabbi Eliezer said.
Right.
Right. I mean,
it's only Rabbi Eliezer who said, Eid Echad, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, So, therefore, the whole thing then would really be that if there's only one witness, then she would be Asura. She would be prohibited to live with the husband. She could not have any relations with him, if you accept, you know, that one witness is sufficient for that, right? And the other thing is the fact that he has to give her a get to get out of the marital union, right? And also that she does not collect the ksub. This is a punishment, okay? Yeah.
But just because, but there's only one witness, so.
That's according to Rabbi Eliezer. But according to Rabbi Yehoshua, it's not going to work that way. According to Rabbi Yehoshua, if you don't have two witnesses, then you cannot go ahead with this business. Okay.
Okay.
What? Sorry, I didn't hear you.
She would get it. He would give her a gift, and she would not collect the tuba on his
right,
gift.
Right.
Say,
right.
Actually, it could be a substitution for inheritance, but certainly
right.
For the divorce.
Yeah. Right. Okay, I think we shall stop at this point and be out less time. I think I'll start from the top of the page over there. All right. I'd like to start with the Rashi first of all. Okay. Says the Mashmash Nimaid. It says the fact that it says aid, right? For knowing Emar aidim, you know this is in reference to the Sota. So in Yodaya the Echad Ka'amar. So don't I know that we're talking about one witness, right? Which of course would support the opinion that was given by Rabbi Eliezer. Elam Nitzrich that Nichtav Echad. Right? Inasmuch as we have the word echod, however, written over there, we had echod lo yaneh b'nefesh amus, right? You see, with Soto it says we aid ein bot, that's all. There's no witness. Now, we could say as follows, right? That aid ein bot could be interpreted as follows, okay? Different possibilities. Aid might be interpreted as we're saying all along that the word. Huh?
What line are
you? I'm going over the Rashi from the top of the page. I'm doing the Rashi from the page, top of the page, okay? One possibility is to say as follows. Aid means that you have to have two witnesses. Why? Because, as we said, it's a binyan od. In other words, that wherever the word aid occurs in the Torah, normally it means two witnesses, right? So, that will, of course, support the view of Rabbi Yehoshua.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Aid, we might say, aid ein bo. In this particular case, is an exception. Why? Because we have supporting testimony from somebody or other as far as the previous warning and so on is concerned. Although we learned that both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua both say that you need two witnesses for warning, right? But as far as you know what happens afterwards, namely the steer of the fact that she, you know, she is secluded with a man. Well, so we could say, inasmuch as she has already been warned in the presence of witnesses, so we could say then, as the Gemara is going to say, raglayim ladover. In other words, there is already a basis for suspecting that she's up to no good when she secludes herself with the man, even after having been warned, right? And so therefore the testimony of only one person, one witness, or the testimony of the husband himself that he saw it happen might be sufficient. This of course was the view of Rabbi Eliezer. Okay, and then maybe we could take the aid and born a different one. Namely, if there is no witness whatever, then what happens in that particular case?
Okay.
Is she a surah? Is she not a surah? Or what? You understand? You see, so this is the problem, right? If there are no witnesses that she secluded herself, right, with a man. None whatever. Okay?
Just hearsay.
Right. And then what? According to Rabbi Yehoshua, if the husband claims that she did, if the husband says that I saw that she secluded herself even after I'd already given the warning in the presence of witnesses and so on and so forth, so it does not require any other witnesses. We'll see. They have suspicions about the husband, however, too. We're going to learn tonight.
The definition I saw.
Right.
You just saw her go in and walk away, or did you stay there?
Oh, okay. Well, that right. We determined also, too. I mean, that on the previous page, we were talking about that, and we said that it has to be for a sufficient amount of time for something to have happened.
It
has to be sufficient, I mean, for it to take place, you see, because otherwise it means nothing. You're right.
Yeah,
I mean,
you
she just went in and left immediately.
Somebody watched the fondue and somebody watched the vector.
Right. How about that? That they don't consent.
I've seen that too.
Apparently they didn't
I've
have a back door in the house. They only had a front door.
I tell you better.
Right, yeah.
Master Shehoyo.
Yeah.
At the Chasnum, at the Yichud, the Kabbal went to Yichud room for more than 30 minutes. And the mother of the Kabbal said, I don't know, maybe my daughter needs me, maybe I should go in there. Masha heard that.
If the daughter needs her, she shouldn't have gotten married.
Well,
that's what the mother said.
Yeah.
Masha was there.
Okay, let's get back to the Rashi that we started with. All right, he says, but no them are edim, right? So any idea the echod ka'amar, the fact if it says a, don't we know that it would mean normally one witness? Elom in this written nichtav echod. Why does the Torah then have to add the word echod? So Shema Amino, from this we learn, the aid shnayim mashma, right? In other words, the normal thing is that whenever the word aid itself occurs, it means two witnesses. The eino eloloshon eidus, because the word aid means nothing other than simply eidus, in other words, testimony, right? Ustam eidus, and testimony has to be given by shnayim, right?
Then I have a problem. Why does the testimony have to be given by two?
Because this we discover, we'll get back to it in the Gemara, but on the normal, the Torah itself says, I'll be Shnayim Edim or Shlosh Edim, Yochum Dover.
Okay.
So on, okay?
The concept of Edim
right.
Circular, all right. Okay.
Correct.
The concept
right.
Of Edim.
Yeah.
All right, okay.
So that this is why Rashi says over here, that the word aid would imply normally that you have to have at least two witnesses to testify. And then the Torah says there aren't two witnesses. The El Kai says before that, in other words, they want to explain what does it mean by the aid ein bo. All right, let's get back, okay? Yeah. Let's get back to the text. But mashma shenem aleikum aid be'ish, right? Inasmuch as we find lo yakum aid, actually remember again it says lo yakum aid echod be'ish, right? But he stops at the word aid. It says, mashma, inasmuch as it is written, a witness shall not arise to testify against the person, right? So, eini yodea shehu echod. Don't I know that we mean echad, only one? Because after all, what is the word aid? It's in the singular, right? Correct? So the supposition has to be echad. So ma talmud lema echad. So then why does the Torah have to specify the word echad? Could have simply left it out. So he said, zeh bono av. This is a binyan av. In other words, this is a general principle that applies throughout the Torah, that what? Kol mokom shenem ar aid, that wherever we find the word aid, hare kan shnayim. Alright? It means two. Ad she yifrot lecho hakosuv echad. Unless the Torah specifically would say only one. Alright? The Yomar Achmona, and the Torah said, trei leisbo elochad. Right? Torah says that, and there aren't two witnesses present in the case of this woman except for one, right? Vehi loid nisposa, and she was not literally caught. Okay? We're going to see that when it comes to the Gemara, to the Rashi, he gives an entirely different twist, because the pshat, the healing is supposed to mean that, that she wasn't caught in the act.
Yeah,
she wasn't caught in the act, right? But that's not the way it's going to be interpreted.
But here, it's more as it is in the Chumash, that she wasn't compelled, correct?
This is how it's going to be interpreted, exactly.
All right.
Okay? The Elin is supposed to, is going to mean that she was not raped against her will, right? Mm. She was not violated, if you want to use a nicer word than raped, okay? So, Asura. So, in other words, if she was not violated, but she went voluntarily with a man, even if there was only one witness, then in that case, she becomes prohibited Asura. To her husband, okay? All right, now let's take a look at the Rashi at this point, because it's a long, it's not so long, but still we see, right. It's a little bit convoluted. Yes.
Before we begin, she's not, with one witness, she's not subject, according to Yehoshua, she's not subject to criminal penalties. Or in other words, to the soda, the pekka soda.
Okay.
But what she's saying, she's still the husband. She's prohibited to her. She's forbidden
right.
to her husband.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Right. Okay. We said, you know, on the previous page, that if she had never been warned by her husband on the testimony of two witnesses, and then in that particular case, and you know, and she's never gone into seclusion with the guy, then in that case she is permitted to have normal relations with her husband if she if the husband was a Kohen, she's Truma and things like that.
Right.
So the question is, at what point would she become Asura? In other words, would she be prohibited to her husband? Okay? And if he was a Kohen, she would no longer be able to eat Truma and things like that. So the answer is, if she secluded herself, okay, if she went into seclusion with the man after she had already been warned on testimony of witnesses and so on, you understand? So then, at this particular point, she is Asura. Which
with only
means
one witness.
Huh?
With only one
even
witness.
If there's only one witness, right.
Or
according to Rabbi Eliezer, even the husband could say, I saw her do it, okay?
All right.
All right. Naturally, again, I repeat, you know,
yeah,
there are different points of view, right.
There.
But this is the way the argument is going at this particular
okay.
point, okay? Now, Asura, as we said, number one, that she cannot live with her husband, right?
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, if a witness really came forth to say that she had secluded herself, then in that case, as I pointed out last week, she would get a get, and she could not collect the ksuba. Normally, a woman collects the ksuba when she gets a get or if she's widowed, okay?
Right.
But in this particular case, this is a knas. In other words,
yeah.
it's a special
right.
punishment that the
right. To give her a gift.
Right.
I mean,
yeah. I mean, he can't
choice.
Live with her anymore
he has no
because
choice.
He's right.
He
was also all right. So, what is the purpose of the drinking of the Mayim of Orim?
Mm-hmm.
Drinking of the Mayim of Orim is actually
to prove that
if she's innocent, you know, that at that particular point, you know, she can resume normal relations
yeah.
with the husband.
Not the purpose too.
Right.
The husband, if he really is just jealous, nothing else, maybe he has charoda and doesn't want it to go.
Yeah,
through.
Well, there are all kinds of safeguards, here. Right. I mean, obviously, if he had charoda, then they wouldn't have the Bayim HaMorim. Or if, let's say, she says, okay, I'm guilty, then in that particular case,
finished.
It's finished. There's no Bayim HaMorim.
Yeah,
she gets a get, and she loses a ksuba and farting. That's all, and the marriage is dissolved, you know.
She's a marked woman.
Right. Obviously, it's not to her credit, but you know, she's not going to go through this entire ceremony, you say, right? Right. Yeah.
She came married fine, of course.
No, I mean, once she gets a get, she can live with anybody, except, we said before, she's not only prohibited, you know, to her husband, to Baalo, but also she's prohibited to Boalo if she actually did cohabit with a man. In other words, she had a lover. And in that particular case, she's also prohibited to her lover. Right. Yeah. Naturally, as a divorcee, she couldn't marry a Kohen. I mean, this goes without saying. I mean, this is also opinion. Right. Yeah. Okay. All right. So that this is the idea, right? Okay. Now, as I said, I want to go over the Rashi.
Okay,
that you know, beginning
fourth line down.
Right, the end of the fourth line. Elotamo, he says, Kushahi says, this actually is a question, it's not a statement. In other words, take it as, what is the reason? Says, all right. Kloma, Tamo dechsiv lo yokum ed echod, right? What is the reason why it's written lo yokum ed echod? It says, Dahahu muchach l'cho, doesn't this prove unto you, Dahai the ed ein bo, that in reference to the Soto, where it says that there is no witness against her, betray Kloma, then we should say that it means that there are no two witnesses to say that she has secluded herself, right? Holav hochi, if it weren't for that, hava amina, we would say, ad dechsiv hocha besoita chad hu. So I would say that maybe in the case of sota, this is an exception, right? And only one witness is required. Dekha amina nafilo echod ein ba. So why does the Torah say, you know, the eid ein ba? So we would say that even if there were not even any witnesses against her, we might feel, you know, that she should be punished by, you know, the getting a get, the losing the ksuba, and so on and so forth. So he says, it's the rich. He says, I need it. All right, let's get back to the Gemara. The Yafilu, he says, Chad Leko. Oh, yeah, right. And even if there's Ela Bimai Mitzra. So now the question is, so why should she become Osir if there is no witness against her? A very logical question,
yeah, right?
So it's the rib. He says, I need it because of the following possibility. Sal kodate chamino. You may think that aid ain bo, right? If there is no witness against her, ain ne'emon bo, right? Then the husband is not believed concerning his testimony, you know, that, you know, she's being unfaithful to him, right? So the Gemara says, Ein ne'emon bo. What do you mean? He's not believed? Ve'elo my boy. So what does he need? He says, Ad ikotre. Do you say that he needs two witnesses? So, lishtay krominay? Then in that case, what do I have to use the word aid in any case about it? For the simple reason that witnesses, if witnesses mean two, well, it says the asya dova dova mimomin. This we can derive from something else, that witnesses must always be at least two in number. Why? Well, because we have, first of all, the word dovar is used, this goes back to the Gemara in the Sanhedrin. I mean, this chapter over there that begins with the words Echad Dinei Mominos, Echad Dinei Nefoshes, and so on. In other words, that we compare Dinei Mominos and Dinei Nefoshes. In what way? Just as, for example, Dinei Nefoshes, it is required to have two witnesses, right? Of course, it says so specifically, right? Al pi shnayim edim or shlosh edim yumas chamesh. So, in other words, the death penalty cannot be assessed unless you have at least two, three witnesses. Of course, the Gemara says afilo meyo, you know, I mean, right? Makes no difference. Absolutely, because they all have to have the same testimony. They must say, I mean, this is what we learned before in Moccasin, remember, that if the testimony is conflicting, then in that case it throws out all the witnesses. Even if you had 99 sets of witnesses who said one thing, and then you have one set of witnesses that say the opposite, that throws out the previous testimony. So that being the case, all right, so we see then that Dinei Nefoshos require two witnesses, right? But we also have a principle that Dinei Mominos also requires it. Why? Because if it's written, Alpi Shnayim Edim or Shlosh Edim Yokum Dovar, so we see that there is a similarity to the language that we have, you know, Alpi Shnayim Edim or Shlosh Edim Yumas HaBeis. There's a similarity. So that, therefore, we say that even in the case of Dovar, what is Dovar? Dovar means any matter. In other words, any matter of, let's say, civil litigation, okay?
Right.
You have to have witnesses in order to prove, you know, your case, okay? So if that's the case, then we see then that in the case of Soto, we should say also, why in the case of Soto, the word Dovar doesn't occur.
Right.
You know where it occurs? It occurs in the case of divorce. It's written, on what ground can a man divorce his wife? Okay? So the answer is, Motzavo Ervas Dovar. Okay? He found something, you know, which is literally, you know, it's open, you know, it's a suspicion that she did, that she committed adultery or something like that. Mm-hmm. Although, in reality, they say that even if he doesn't like the way she cooks, this is Rabbi Akiva. He doesn't like the way she cooks, he could also divorce her, okay?
Really?
But some say that that's a euphemism. It means that he doesn't like her behavior, okay? But technically, I mean, you know, that if you have, if both parties are willing to divorce, I mean, then there's no question you can have a divorce, you see, yes. So, at any rate, what we're saying is over here then, that okay, since we're talking, you know, about dissolution of marriage, and the word davar occurs over there, and the word davar, the form of davar is, right? Mm-hmm. We have said davar hotseach, and so on and so forth, right? So you see that the word davar occurs in these various cases, and therefore we say, if it applies to two witnesses in dini mavanos, and if it applies to two witnesses in dini nefashos, then in that case it has to apply also where we're going to look for grounds to dissolve a marriage based on infidelity. Okay? So, let's see, right, but anu yadada, and I would know that in this particular case then, that this is a rule which applies to every case of giving testimony when it comes to the law of the Torah. Okay? So he says, Istarich. No, he says, I need this word, you know, the Eid and Bof, for the following reason. It says, Salkadate Chamina. We might think that the case of the Sota, right, is shani, is different from, you know, the ordinary types of litigation or criminal cases that we've been, you know, citing as evidence for the fact that Eidus requires them. Why? Deraglayim la dovar. Because we say, hey, literally there is feet for the matter, but what it really means is that you have a basis. This is really one of the things, that they have a basis for what's going on. I mean, the fact, you know, that we're suspicious, and maybe one witness would be enough. Shaharei kinoi lo, because, first of all, he has already given her a warning. This is how we first interpreted the word kinoi, or also have the idea of jealousy also, as we'll see. Vinistero, and then what did she do? She went and she secluded. So, lishamein bo eid echad, and in that case, since we already have grounds for suspicion, so if she goes and she secludes herself, even with only one witness who's there to testify to that fact, so let this one witness be believed. Yeah, all right. But the point, I understand, I mean, you're 100% right, but maybe this is the way we should interpret it.
This
I'm not
the
saying
argument,
that.
The argument
is maybe this is the way it should be interpreted, that one witness would be sufficient to, you know, enable the husband to dissolve the marriage in this particular case, because of the fact that after having been warned, she went and she did.
Again.
Okay? Because this is the Raglayim Ladova. She had already received the prior warning. If she had not received the prior warning, then there's nothing. But if she had received a prior warning already, then in that case, Raglayim Ladova. I mean, there are grounds for suspicion. There's a basis for suspicion. Okay?
You could make the same argument. I don't want to try, but you could make the same argument. Man was warned not to take, be violent to another man.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
The warning took place.
Yeah.
He was in a room. Someone saw him go in the room of the other man.
Right, right.
Someone saw him run out.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
And the other man was dead. Right.
Dead. All right.
Correct. Right.
One.
What did
one,
we rule?
One witness. One witness sees all.
And the Gemara rules that, Taki, you cannot convict this man on the basis, even though the circumstantial evidence looks 100% against him, and yet you cannot convict him.
Right.
Right. Correct.
We have big cases that have been in this country, let's say, with just Supreme Court Justice, what's his name, the black man?
Thomas.
Thomas, a woman.
Clarence Thomas, yeah.
Witnesses fit for requirement for witnesses.
Yeah.
But see,
this is interesting. You require witnesses.
Yes, that's an irony. This is why, it's interesting because this form of justice much more safeguards the rights of the accused than either the English form, which we file in the United States with the American ramifications, or the modern Israeli jurisprudence. I mean, it's really, from the point of view of personal freedom, it's a wonderful thing.
Much more difficult
to convict.
Also, it takes away all possibility of thinking that the person was sane or insane. There must be a server. He must acknowledge the fact, yes, this is going to happen. So there's no question about it.
It's true. I mean, without Hasra on the part of witnesses and the man saying, I know, I understand this would be my punishment, etc. Correct. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Correct. That's a good point.
Yeah.
It's all
incompetent. It doesn't mean that they're not going to imprison him.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But there's no doubt about it.
What do they say? Ritzon Kodem? Premeditation? How would you say that?
Ritzon Mukdam, I guess.
Prior. That's right. Everything would be premeditated.
English law is different than ours. English-speaking laws, but I think you would know more about it.
You're absolutely correct. I mean, over 200 years in all areas of the law, I mean, American experience is different from the English. There's no question about it in every aspect of law. But still, the basis and a great deal of the law is English.
It's still British common law, that's no question.
Yeah.
Yep.
It looks like English is the
forefront of justice. We'll see. Okay. All right. So the Gemara says, Mimotis Amrit, can you really say that Ein Emon Bo, that he will not be believed concerning her? The Sharia? I mean, if it's not going to be believed, then the woman would be literally, she's free from all suspicion and everything else, and you can't do anything to her. But look, it says, "Benichsir behilin isposa." The fact that it's written behilin isposa, literally, she wasn't caught, but as we said, she wasn't violated. So miklal da surah, we see the fact that, inasmuch as the Torah says, look, she wasn't caught literally, and yet, what does the Torah imply? That she is asura. That she is prohibited to the husband. The minute that there is, after all, she was warned and everything else, and then she secluded herself, then automatically, in other words, she's not free. She's, at this particular point, she's prohibited to her husband. So it's the Rechti says. I need it. The Salkadate Chamina Eine Monbo, the husband will not be believed concerning her ad deiko trei, right, until there are two witnesses, ubetrei name, and even if you had two witnesses, right, he the loin is posa. The fact is, that it has to be that she had not been violated, but she had willingly gone and secluded herself over there. Then Kamashmalon, therefore, this teaches us that what? That in this particular case, one witness would be sufficient. Okay? Based on the reasoning, as we said, Raglayim Ladova, right? That there are good grounds for suspicion, that she did something wrong. Okay.
This is the halakha.
This is the halacha that...
not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily, but this is how the argument is shaping up so
okay.
far. Okay. Okay. All right, let's go on, first of all, to the to Rashi.
Mm-hmm.
God bless Rashi. Okay, it's the Rich. That's the next thing that we had over there, right? We need it. Why? Lo yakum eid echad. Why do we need lo yakum eid echad? You know, that the person, you know, one witness cannot arise literally against the person. So he says, the galuy ale, in order to testify, to reveal to us the high, you know, this basic reasoning, ulash me'inon, and also to let us learn that the chad mehemon, right, that in the case of the sota, one witness would be believed in this particular case. Why? The ilav hochi, because if it were not so, in other words, that one witness alone would be sufficient to be believed, then hava aminu, they would say, kol stam eid echad hu, right? Whenever we find the word eid, it means one. Uvesota lo hava aminu de mitzra, and we would say that in the case of the sota, she would not be prohibited. Even if there are one witness, you know, to testify, she secluded herself. The chol shekein, and all the more so below aid where there isn't any witness whatever. The hochi havedashin lay, and so this is how we should interpret it, right? That the aid ain bo, the koma rachmona, that where the Torah says, and there is no witness against her. So hochi ko'amar, this is what the Torah says, be'ed echod e'ne'emon ba, right, that one witness is not to be believed in testifying against her, elo shenayim, but we have to have two witnesses, okay? Ufarkinan, says Rashi. So now they break the following question, right? What do you mean? One witness will not be believed? That means, you know, that's a question, right? Astonishment? Yep. Elamai boy, kra. So what is the Torah doing? Why does it require aid, right? The ikotre, to tell me that the word aid means that you have to have two witnesses? Question mark. Amai osa kra lahai. So what do I need a pasuk for this over here? Lishto kromine, let the Torah just be silent, and we know that if it says eid ain bo, it means you don't have two witnesses against them, right? So they say, and furthermore, we have a gezeira shava, dover dover mimomon, right? Ksiv bino efes, it's written in the case of a woman who is suspected of adultery. Actually, it says a woman who commits adultery, no ephes. But in reality, she's not really, okay. But anyway, it's written over there, Kimotsubo Evasnova, right? He has found something. The truth of the matter is, we look over there, we see that it's a little bit confusing, okay? Because at first we say, you know, that he can, you know, what's a boy, Eva's Nova means that for any reason, he suspects lewdness of her, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But, and then he divorces her, etc., etc. All right. So, in the case of a woman who he suspects of infidelity, and we hand the word Dovor, Uchsib Dinimomenes, and in the case of Dinimomenes, it's written up, Ishnei Edim Yochum Dovor, right? So, in that case, why do we need a pasuk to tell us that aid means two? Mm-hmm. So, Rashi says, Itzarich, I need it. Lo yakum, we need this, lo yakum, liguluye ale, to testify concerning that the high aid, dimishnayim hakosim adate, right? That the word aid always refers to two witnesses. The ilo gali ale, because if this were not the obvious intention, then hava amina, then I would say aid, that if you see the word aid,
yeah,
right, then it's chad mashma, then it means only one. The einemon bo, and the fact, and he would not be believed concerning her. So a posse comes along, Lashmin, to teach us, right, that, you know, with, one witness would not be enough. With the kasha de chor, so if it's difficult for you, lomali kro, what do I need a posik? Sol kodate chamina, I might think then that sota, she'acha kinui is a sira, bo ede chod, that once the woman has been warned, right, and she has gone into seclusion with the guy against whom she was warned, right, bo ede chod, and then one witness would come along, the heyid, and he would testify that she has become defiled by this seclusion, as we say, on what basis? I mean, did he look into the window or something to see what was going on? But as we said before, if you know they're there in seclusion for a time long enough for a sexual act to have taken place, then in that case, okay, so ishani, right, then it's different than the ordinary case. Right, and it's worthwhile or it's correct to believe him. Tan, right? Shavei raglaim ladover, because there are grounds, you know, for the fact that you know that she may have done something bad. Okay, so then he says mim otis amrit, and if you say the iloi gale rachmono, that if it were not for the fact that the Torah said the chol eich naim heim. Right, that means two. The ana minot, I would say, the high aid ain bo, it means einem on bo koma. It means he's not to be believed. So imkain bo hakosav lahakilu leho. Right. So in other words, the pasuk has come in order to make things easier for the woman. Right. Baha medichsiv leinis pasuk klal. And the fact that it's written that she was not caught, miklal, at all. So the pshita lechor, the nitmeor. So why does it say nitmeor? Right, that she has become defiled. Right, vehechikoma vehilan isposa. And why then does it say that she was not literally caught, or as we translated as violated? Right. So. On the Eidain Bo, right? So that refers to if there is no witness whatever against her, right? So Nehi Dereisha Dekra, so we see from this basis that we would say that the first part of the Pasuk, Ikola Meima, we should say, Al Yedei Shnayim Eidim, right? She needs to, there have to be two witnesses to warn her, right? The Shochav Ish Oiso, Be Eidim. Right, and that a man has lain together with her, this requires eidim. We need two witnesses, right? The eid echod einem onbo, and one witness is not to be believed against her. Elo, the hilein is posa, the fact that she was not violated, heichikai, what are you going to do with it? So he says, einem onbo, you say, that it refers to the fact that he's not going to be believed concerning her. Her amrit the lo mechaski lo the hanivelis. That's to teach us that we do not feel, you know, that she has actually had relations with another man. Well, as we can see, there is over here a great difference of opinion as to whether the one witness would be sufficient based on the fact that she's been warned or not, or do we say that the general principle that two witnesses
holds true
must, and that holds true in the case of the sota equally. And this is part of the reason why we have a difference of opinion between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua. Okay.
It seems that
yes.
Rashi, two things. It seems that Rashi defines Nitpasa, right.
yeah.
As being violated or compelled, not as being caught in the
correct,
so, okay.
Correct.
It also seems as if he, I don't know if he's trying to repeat, but or he's interjecting his own opinion, but it seems as if he is saying that one witness is not to be believed, that
right.
Requires
right.
Two witnesses, even with regard to being a surah.
Yeah, that's the
seems
way the
so.
Argument runs at this particular
okay.
point. Right. Okay. Needless to say, we haven't come to the end of the
right.
The discussion yet concerning the state.
Okay.
So now let's get back to the Gemara. Okay.
Right.
Gemara says, right, the Rabbi Yeshua, right, or Mekani Lo Pishtaim, right? He says that the warning has to be given by two witnesses, but also the very fact, you know, that she committed, you know, that she went and she secluded herself to Stira, right? This also has to be on the basis of two witnesses. One, you cannot accept. So Gemara naturally asks, by Tavna Rabbi Yeshua, yeah, what is his reasoning? So he says, Zabakra, because the Torah says, Bo. Remember, it says, the aid ain't Bo, right? There is no witness against her. So Bo means velo bikinui, Bo velo b'skira. Neither when it comes to the kinui, in other words, the warning given to her, nor when it comes to the fact, you know, that she secluded herself with a man subsequently. In other words, one witness alone is not sufficient in either case. That's how he understands. The Rabbi Eliezer, who naturally disagrees with him, Omer, so he interprets it as follows. He says, Bo velo bikinui, velo bikinui. In other words, when it comes to the warning, he says, I accept that interpretation. It means that the one her, you have to have two witnesses. But he doesn't take, obviously, the other interpretation of Rabbi Yeshua, that, you know, Bo velo bistira, that he doesn't do. Okay? The aim of Bo, so this is the question that they ask now of Rabbi Eliezer. Now, look, so let's say Bo velo bistira, right? In other words, why do we say that it means one, but you know, not when it comes to seclusion? So why does Rabbi Eliezer say that only one witness is sufficient over there? So he says, Stira is kashta tuma. He says that Stira has been compared to the actual act of tuma itself. Why? Dichsiv, because the pasuk says, v'nistara, right? She has secluded herself, v'hinitmara, right? And she has become defiled. So, kinui name. So they ask the question, but look, the warning too, right? Is kashla tumor, that was also compared to tumor, dixiv, after all the pasuk says over there, the kine es ishtoi the hinit mo, right? You notice that the word the hinit mo is twice written in the chapter in Pasha Sota, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that being the case, so why don't they were asking Rabbi Eliezer, so why aren't you consistent, right? If you say that Bo, right, that she needs one witness is not sufficient in the case of Kinui, so why don't you say that one witness, you know, is also not enough in the case of Stira, right? So he says, Homiyet Rachmona Bo. Says the fact that the Torah adds the word Bo, twice, it means that the second time around is in order to exclude. This is a funny kind of a business, but I have to tell you, we find it in other cases in the Gemara too. Not specifically over here, but, you know, when they take words, so very often there's a problem, you know, with ribui, which means that you add on the basis of the fact that the word will be repeated again. And then we have a principle that says, Ein ribui acharuvi elo lebayit. In other words, in some cases, why does the Torah add another word? The answer is in order to exclude from the general rule.
So that, two
minuses. Yeah, right. I mean, it's like two minuses, exactly. Okay. So that being the case, maybe this is what we have over here. This, according to Rabbi Eliezer, this would seem to be his reason, right? That why does the Torah have to mention twice? So the first time, as we said, to establish that one witness is not sufficient as far as the kidui, as far as the warning is concerned, but the second time around to tell us that when it comes to Stira, there the Torah says one witness is to be believed. Amaro Isa, How do you understand it? Mistabri says, I can figure it out logically, according to Rabbi Eliezer. He says that. He says, Stira Adipa. He says, because, you know what? The fact that she secludes herself, this is much stronger than simply the kinui. Okay? Shekein usarto betuba, right? Because what happens as a result of the fact that she is gone, we said before, remember, that she is warned, right? But that doesn't prohibit her yet to her husband. What prohibits her to her husband? The fact that after the warning, she went and then she went into seclusion with the guy against whom she was warned. All right. So he says, Tira adifo shekein usarto. Kituma, because if she secludes herself, then that already imposes upon her the penalty that she cannot have relations anymore with the husband, even as if it were actual tuma. Okay?
That's what I see. That
yeah.
They're not necessarily, they're creating a different grounds.
Yeah.
For the asura and for the get,
yeah,
it's not really proof of you know, Allah or
you mean you're not, what you want to say is that it's not exactly proof of the fact, you know,
right,
that she had yes, illicit relations.
It's just
yeah,
that her,
right,
it's more like what you would say is
right,
open and towards.
Right.
Yeah, open
right,
and notorious behavior.
Right, exactly.
In other words,
yeah,
if you can divorce really for any reason, then culture gain, you could divorce for like an open and notorious conduct on the part of your wife that she's associating with other men.
Right, right.
Alone. I mean,
it's not only the divorce. If she divorces his wife for any reason, she gets exhumed.
Correct, right.
So
exactly, absolutely right. I mean, right, we've stressed the fact that this
is
the punishment that she
has. Right, that's
a good
point,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right, you're right.
Exuva could be considered a monk.
Yes,
of course.
I've seen a balance sheet of the early 18th century, maybe late 17th century, where a man listed under his liability the exuva and the perception of his wife on a legal balance sheet.
Yeah.
So these are
interesting. Well, it's interesting. Kosanar is well among the Spartan, the customers. They started to spell out how many shkalim this one has to give, how many shkalim the other one has to give. You know, we're only concerned with the 200 shekel, right?
Right.
The 200 shkalim. But they add, you know, the Tosefet ketubah, you know, the adding on to the ketubah the amount of money, you know, that they're.
That's definitely.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something else. In the law, in the inheritance law, if a man dies, all right, the wife has the choice of taking under the will or her ketubah. She can't take both. Believe this or not. If a man dies, right, because he dies, that's when ketubah also comes into play as well as divorce.
Okay.
Under the law, she can take
under whose law?
Under the Israeli,
present Israeli law.
Modern,
right, that's what we have to establish, right?
Israeli,
which
you know,
law
the
you're talking
Knesset
about? Yes.
Law,
right.
That she has the choice of taking under the will or under the intestate share or ketubah, but she can't have both.
Uh-huh.
It shows how important,
that's
in
that,
some
that,
cases,
that,
the ketubah was considered.
Yeah.
That is logical.
Yeah.
However, under the Talmudic law.
Yeah.
She has other protection because the husband's sons are obligated to maintain her.
Yeah.
Which in the other case may not be the
case. Yeah. Okay. All right. Actually, of course, you have to realize, according to the law of the Talmud, a woman does not inherit her husband.
Nor
okay?
daughter.
Right. Daughters, yes, possibly.
Well, if there are no,
if
I mean,
there are
no
sons,
yeah,
go
sorry,
to the daughters, right?
Clear, yeah.
Okay. But, you know, if there were neither sons nor daughters, she still doesn't inherit.
Mm-hmm.
She gets the ksuba. But, obviously, you know, what is left of the estate after the ksuba has been taken care of, then that would go to whoever the heirs are.
So
but what Arthur mentioned is correct, that the sons do have the mitzvah, the obligation, if you wish, the chiyuv, okay, of helping to support her, and also to support their sisters, as long as the sisters are unmarried. Because they say for a man to go from door to door to go begging in order to, it's not as disgraceful as for a woman to go around to do it.
But she's vulnerable.
Right. Sure. Yeah. All right. Anyway, let's continue a little bit further with the Gemara. All right. So argument then was given, you know, that stira, right, is already that stronger, right, because it makes her prohibited, as if it were actually tumah, right? So he says, Adrabba, on the contrary, maybe I could argue differently. He says, kinui odif, says maybe the very fact that she's being warned, this already is a stronger reason, shekein ikar goram lo, because in the final analysis, this is what brought on the whole business. Why? He loves Tira, kinui mi iko, because if she had not been guilty of hanging out together with a certain guy in seclusion, then there would never have been the reason for the husband to go and to give her a warning about her conduct, right? The ilav kinui, and if not for the fact, you know, that he warns her, then stira maya hani, so what difference does it make if she secludes herself? You understand? If she has never been given the prior warning not to seclude herself. So he says, afilo hochi, nevertheless, in spite of this, he says, stira adipa. I say, he says, that the very fact, you know, that she secludes herself, this is the stronger argument than the kinui. Why? Das halted the tumahi, because this is the very beginning of tumah. That's why we said, you know, it's like tumah already, right? So he says, oh, I think I'm going to stop at this point over here. All right?
Great.
All right.
We're in the middle of what?
Right? Almond days, the middle of it. Okay. Because we'll continue with a counter argument to Mir Sashem. You know, how many witnesses have to be present for her, you know, to have to go through the ordeal of drinking the mayim hamo'oririm? So, according to Rabbi Eliezer, it's sufficient al pi eid echad, if one witness is there to witness the fact that she had secluded herself, you know, with the man against whom she had been warned previously not to, and of course this seclusion, you know, is for a long enough period, as we'll learn again, if the Gemara will repeat, to presume, you know, that illicit relations had taken place, then in that particular case, the testimony of this one witness is enough already to cause her to have to go through the ordeal, okay? On the other hand, Rabbi Yeshua, as we saw, says that you have to have the two witnesses. And each one based upon, of course, a different interpretation of the word ba, the aid ain ba, that there is no witness against her. How do they interpret the aid ain ba? So we saw, first of all, that there was a whole discussion, you know, about the idea, does the word aid mean what witness, or does the word aid mean at least two witnesses and so on, right? And then following that, we saw that they used the expression the eid ein bo in order to apply to the different stages, namely kinui and stira. Okay, so tonight we'll continue with now a third opinion, and this is the opinion that they quote right now in the name of Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Huda. Okay. Let's see. Yes. We had, of course, last time a very interesting discussion. I mean, which is the determining factor? Is it the stira or is it the kinui, right? In other words, is it the warning?
Or is it the
fact that she, you know, secludes herself? And we saw that there are differences of opinion. One of them says that, you know, ilav stira kinui meyiko. In other words, that if it was not for the fact that she had already secluded herself before, then would there ever have been
any
warning in the first place? But if you love kinui, stira mayahani, but if you don't give the warning, then what good is it? I mean, the business with the stira. I mean, all that would happen is simply that she would be the Seret al Bala, if witnesses can testify the fact that she was there and so on, but she would not have to go through the business of drinking the Maivorim. And so he says, Afilo Hochi, is that nevertheless, that Stira Adifo, that the fact of the seclusion, this is the more important, the stronger determining factor, the Aschalto de Tumahi. Alright? Because this is the beginning of the process of the fact that she will be committing an adulterous act. Now, so the Gemara now says, Masniso the Lo Kehai Tana. Says the Mishnah that we quote at the beginning of the chapter is actually not in agreement with another statement made by a different authority. And who is this authority? The Tanya says, we've learned, it says, it happens to be a quotation from the Sefta, which says, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Emer, Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yosef, the son of Yehuda, says, in the name of Rabbi Eliezer. Same Rabbi Eliezer before with the Mishnah, but now it's a different twist. Hamakane li Ishtoi, it says that if a person, warns his wife, so Hamakane al pi eid echad, right, then he warns her according to one witness, right, or by his own. Now this is completely different, of course, from what we've had before. What did we say before? Even Rabbi Eliezer before said that we need how many witnesses? Two witnesses for the act of kiddui, right? And here along comes this Tana, and he says in the name of Rabbi Eliezer that if a person wants to warn his wife, so he could do it on the basis of only one witness, Eid Echad, or even if there are no witnesses, simply because he wants to warn her. He's not happy with her conduct, and so he gives her a warning. Well, mashkelah, but in order to cause her to drink the mayim hamorim, then that already would be al pishdayim. That would be on the basis of the testimony of two witnesses. So Heishiva Chacham Nadiver Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Huda. So they said to him, he says, look, Eina Dover Sof, what you're telling us doesn't make any sense because there's no end to it. No end to what? So as Rashi explains, no end to the fact that if the husband is a jealous type, and according to this particular statement, Al Pi Atzmo, he doesn't even have to have any other witness. All he has to do is to say, I don't like your actions, and don't do this, and don't do that, and this would be reason enough already for Maim HaMa'orim now. There's no limit to how much he could do, you see. So that doesn't make any sense, they said. So they say, My Talmud, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda. So what is the reason that he quotes this particular opinion? It says, Omar Kroa, because the Torah says, Bo'a, again, that's the eight ain Bo, right? So he says, Bo' below Bistira, meaning that as far as she's concerned, far as Stira is concerned, as far as secluding herself, she needs two witnesses for that. But simply to give her a warning, this would be sufficient. Al Piyatzai. V'yeimor Bo' below Bikinui. So they ask the question, well, maybe we should interpret that the word Bo' means simply that, that does not apply to kinui, to simply warning. So he says, kinui is kash letumah. He says, the actual warning is given, it's compared to already tumah. Why is it compared to tumah? Dichsiv, because it's written, the kinei esishto vehinit mor. The pasuk says that he's jealous of his wife, but as we interpret it, means that he gives a warning to his wife, and, the kinei esishto vehinit mor, really strictly speaking, would mean that he's very jealous of his wife because of the fact that he suspects that what? That she has had illicit relations, right? This is the reason why. This is the hinit mor. So he says, "Tira na me yiskash tuma." So you're going to compare the tuma. We can say that the seclusion is also is compared to tuma. Dichsev v'nistaro v'hinit mor. That she secludes herself and she becomes defiled. Okay, so if that's the case, actually we find then that the pasuk says twice nitmor, right? First of all, it says mekine seishtovi nitmor, and then it says v'nistrovi nitmor. So in that case, according to Rabbi Yosef Reb Yehuda, who says that it's sufficient only by, what does he need the second pasuk, v'nistro of Nitmor? So he says, Hahu lechamashiyastira, ketei tuma. He says, well, the reason why we have the second one is to simply teach us the fact how long a period of time is necessary for the husband, to be able to feel that she has definitely committed, adultery. The answer is because it has to be a sufficient amount of time where an action could have taken place. So, obviously then, we have now three different opinions, okay? Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, okay? So again, Heshiva Chalmud de Rabbi Yosef Yehuda. They still are in disagreement what he has to say, and they say to him, "Ena Dovasov, look, you're giving us an argument for which there is no ending to the argument. It can happen again and again. Why?" He says, "My Nihu, what? What is the reason?" Because he says, "The Zimnin de Loikoni." The Yomakon. There are times when he never even gave her any warning. And what does he do? He makes a declaration, "I warned her." So in other words, if he is a very jealous type of a husband, he will make up stories, about these things. So he says, "Hold the Mishnah Seinu Yeshadovasov." If we go in accordance with the Mishnah, then in that particular case, the Mishnah itself will say that, hey, he can't get away with doing anything like that. Can't be simply alpi atzmai because of the fact that he has to have corroborative witnesses. Right? Zimnin deloy istatar, because there are, Zimnin deloy kodav yobakalai, right. Zimnin, why? Because there are times the low is tater, the yoma is tater, because there are times in which he'll claim, that she was in seclusion, with the guy against whom he won, and he says she was in the seclusion. So that therefore, we cannot really accept alpi atzbo, simply the declaration of the husband that, she committed something because the elder.